What does the singer-songwriter Sting, the religious ruler Nicodemus, and author Catherine McNeil have in common? This may take a minute, so stay with us.
We all have a lot of questions, and we all have a lot that we wrestle with. What does life even mean? How can we handle the fact that we will all die? What is the point of being here? How can we help each other along the way? Like, these are not things that we can have certainty about. These are things that we have to wrestle day after day. And I think that is the invitation, the doorway to faith, to meaning, to meaningfulness, to a relationship with God, to a relationship with each other.
Welcome to the Mudroom.
It might be a mess, but that's what it's here for.
Whatever junk you're carrying with you, you can leave it here.
However much of a mess you are today, the mudroom is here for you.
Place to drop off all the other selves we are constantly putting on and taking off.
A place to catch your breath as your soul catches up with you.
We don't have to be anything in the mudroom except our messy, marvelous selves.
So, have a seat.
Take a deep breath.
And enter in with us.
This is episode 13, Doubt's Doorway to Deep Faith, a conversation with author and speaker Catherine McNeil. I'm your host, Nicole Wu. I'm a writer and editor here at The Mudroom, and I'm also a longtime Sting fan. Would you indulge me for a few minutes? And hey, at least I'm not talking about Travis and Taylor. At least not this time. And I promise you, this will come back around quickly to our discussion with Catherine McNeil on doubt and faith and deconstruction. I looked out across the river today, saw a city in the fog and an old church tower where the seagulls play. Gordon Sumner, or Sting to most of us, spills out a song with the cadence of a carefree river laughing its way to the ocean. And friends, be glad I'm not singing it here for you right now. I drum my fingers on the steering wheel of my car, but brace for the lyric's dark turn. I know that it's coming. Saw the sad Shire horses walking home in the sodium light. Two priests on the ferry, October geese on a cold winter's night. It's not unlike Sting to play with cognitive dissonance in his lyrics and music. Here, it's unmistakable. In his song, All This Time, a track on his 1991 album, The Soul Cages. It was released in the aftermath of both his parents' deaths. All this time, the river flowed endlessly to the sea, comes the chorus, and then the narrative. Two priests came round our house tonight, one young, one old, to offer prayers for the dying to serve the final rite, one to learn, one to teach which way the cold wind blows, and fussing and flapping in priestly black, like a murder of crows. And yeah, you sort of can't miss the religious imagery there. This is more than a 90s pop song. So much more. It's a goodbye, penned by a son shrouded in loss and peppered with existential and theological pushback, with absolutely no closure. The song continues with a litany of questions the son seems to ask the priest in his father's sick room, culminating with this modified chorus near the song's end. All this time, the river flowed endlessly, like a silent tear. All this time, the river flowed. Father, if Jesus exists, then how come he never lives here? To this day, All This Time is one of my all-time favorite songs. It's both hauntingly beautiful and disturbing, which is strange for a girl who wanted it all tied up in a nice, neat little bow. Doubt has a reputation, especially in faith circles, of being a dirty word. But maybe that's why the song moves me whenever it comes on. Sting isn't afraid to lean into the darkness of it. He, unlike me, isn't afraid to question. And honestly, as I work out my own faith with fear and trembling, that's a downright liberating notion. It turns out I'm not alone. And author Catherine McNeil will take that even a step further, that these very questions and doubts are a doorway to deeper belief in Jesus. Today, she joins us in the mudroom to talk about leaning into the deeper questions that accompany a crisis of faith and how to walk alongside those we love who are. But before we get into this conversation, here's a bit more on Catherine. From her own website, Catherine kindles conversations that mingle theology with real life and open eyes to God's ongoing presence in our world. She studied and taught intercultural studies and theology, has an MA in human service counseling, and is working on a Master of Divinity at North Park Theological Seminary. Her books include Fearing Bravely, Risking Love for Our Neighbors, Strangers, and Enemies, All shall be well, awakening to God's presence in this messy, abundant world, and Long Days of Small Things, Motherhood as a Spiritual Discipline. She's published widely in many different places, including here at The Mudroom. So join us now for a conversation about doubt, uncertainty, and faith, and how maybe they're not mutually exclusive after all.
Catherine, welcome to the Mudroom. It's so good to have you here.
Oh, it's so good to be here with you, Nikki. Thanks for having me on today.
I appreciate you just taking the time for us because, as we'll get to later, I know that your schedule is pretty jam-packed. So thank you for stepping into the Mudroom here for a few minutes. Catherine, so when we were dreaming up conversations for this Mudroom theme that we have going on right now, which is called Lost and Found, I thought right away of you. And that is because not only do I admire and respect your thoughtful approach to theology and spiritual formation, and we've talked about that before, we've had a podcast with you before, but also because of your heart for marginalized populations inside and outside of the church. And indeed, your last book, Fearing Bravely, was all about that, where you were examining obstacles that prevent us from loving our neighbors and exploring ways that we can step out and step over those obstacles. And so I thought, we need to talk to Catherine McNeil again. So I'm so thankful that you can be with us. Another reason why I really wanted to talk to you was because of a few conversations that we've had off and on over the last year regarding your own spiritual journey. Obviously, we can find you there somewhere between lost and found and just looking back at your own life story. And you and I were discussing these waves of faith deconstruction that are washing over a lot of people in our own demographic and friends and loved ones. Some of those folks are shedding faith altogether, and some of them are pulling back layers of Christian subculture in search of biblical truth. So you sort of have this whole spectrum of people that you can categorize within deconstruction. I think at some point, I know I was begging you to write a book. Catherine, can you please write a book to help me? It was a very selfish request to help me in walking alongside people that are somewhere in this deconstruction process. I think at that point you had mentioned that you had journeyed into a similar space in your heart, one point in your life where you were struggling with some issues around faith, that you had undergone this yourself. So it wasn't necessarily at midlife where a lot of people seem to be doing this, but it was at an earlier age, but nonetheless, you were doing it.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Okay. So I thought, what a great person to have on, someone that has been through this and someone who is writing a book adjacent to this. Our Lost and Found series here at the Mudroom is really about seeing the invisible church. And a big part of the invisible church right now are these folks that are struggling with faith and peeling back these layers of Christian subculture. What we want to do is to be able to see the unseen people in this invisible church and more lovingly embrace them. And I know that's your heartbeat after many conversations with you and after reading Fearing Bravely. Let's jump into this new project that you're working on, seeing as it's very near to what we're talking about today.
Yes.
I was really excited, Catherine, when you announced this project, as it seems to address this wave of deconstruction that is happening, that seems to crest for many of us at midlife. But can you tell us a little bit more about the project? How did you find it? Or maybe how did it find you? Just give us a little bit of background on that.
Yeah, well, I'm currently co-writing a book with my author friend, Jason Haig. He's the author of a book called Aching Joy, which is about navigating through the land of unanswered prayer. Well, he and I have both written a lot about the spiritual life and spiritual formation from a perspective that is definitely not trying to put a bow on anything. Like, we're trying to be really honest about the realities of life and the realities of spiritual life. So this particular book is going to be about the mid-faith crisis. I think most of us are familiar with the midlife crisis, but we wanted to write about a mid-faith crisis because a lot of times when we're talking about disillusionment or deconstruction, we talk about it as though it was a shocking surprise, something terrible that's happening to us and we have no idea how to get through. But what I've found in the research that I've done and also in my own experience is that there's actually something pretty normal and healthy about questioning and about doubting. And that if we're going to have a lifetime faith, that kind of grows with us as we grow. We need to be equipped, not just with the understanding that we are going to question, we are going to doubt, we're going to turn away from some things, we're going to turn towards other things. But that's actually a good and normal and natural and even necessary stage, which does not make it fun or easy. You know, like if you are turning away from a high control environment with abusive leaders, that's going to take therapists and maybe medication and all kinds of extremely difficult, challenging, life-altering steps and processes. If you are turning away from political or intellectual ideas that you built a whole life around and are rejecting now, and you're turning towards something else, but you don't even know what it is that you're turning towards. I don't want to in any way downplay how devastating that can be. But what I'm not hearing very many people say is, welcome, you know, like, this is a good process. This can be a generative and life-giving process, not taking you to death, not taking you to disillusion. And I don't mean disillusionment, I meant disillusion. I mean, not that everything is dissolving, but that you are moving ahead. You are moving forward. Just like when my kids lose their baby teeth. This is something I talk about a lot. It feels traumatic. It hurts. You can't eat very well, your mouth is bleeding, and it seems like you've lost this tool that you need to get through the day. But we know that a few months down the road, you're going to have stronger teeth, better teeth, teeth that are more equipped to get you through decades of life that you have ahead of you. The teenage years are that way, I think, in a lot of ways. The toddler years are that way. And so why wouldn't there be a phase of faith, probably more than one, multiple phases of faith, where you say, man, I saw things this way before, and I don't see them that way anymore. Why would we expect stagnation to be the definition of spiritual health? That's what I'm hoping to unpack a little bit in this book. What we're helping to unpack since I'm co-writing it. Yeah. And again, I want to give the reader hope and vision for this being in some ways a process of death, because a lot of people are leaving abuse and they are leaving high control environments and they are leaving pain. And so I'm not in any way saying this can be fun. This can be great. It is painful, but it can be the path to life.
Yes. It's interesting that it seems like somehow, especially maybe in evangelical circles, there's this expectation that you come to faith and you own that faith and live into it. And that's it. Like you just hold on to that faith until you die.
Yep.
And that is not the truth. Right. Even if you look back at Jesus and his disciples in that short period of time, they were continually evolving in their understanding of who he was and faith and being rocked sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Completely. So this idea that we have is really inaccurate. And I love that you're stepping in and addressing it and saying, this can actually be a good thing. Even our way out of the toddler phase.
Yeah. But maybe we aren't out of the spiritual toddler phase, you know? And I think that a lot of times the way we are introduced to faith, it's kind of, you know, read this statement on a card. And once you have read it out loud, said, I believe XYZ and I give my life to Jesus, then you're done. Just hang on to that card, you know, but that's not faith. That's a declaration, or it's a statement. It's a prayer. But faith is saying, I'm going to take my life, my energy, my body, my thoughts, and I'm going to head in this direction. And then you head in the direction. And that is something that you have to do every single day. And there's going to be course corrections. And there's going to be days when you are laying in the ditch. And there are days when you are snapping pictures at the top of the mountain. And sometimes you're going to have a whole group of people with you. And sometimes you're going to be all by yourself. And we have to talk about that. You know, it's not just reading the statement off of the card when you're starting off on the journey. It's a harrowing journey. I think we are also often told by our leaders, by our communities, that if you ever deviate at all from this initial statement on the card, that you've lost it. But again, consider my marriage. I made vows to my husband over 20 years ago, and I am planning on keeping those vows all the way through. But the things that I say to him, the way that I view him, the things that we do together, they have had to ebb and flow through the years. And if I just every day said, oh no, I'm reading those vows again, they're the same, 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 that's not necessarily the best way for me to keep those vows. I need to get to know him, and I need to allow him to know me, and I need us to change and grow together over the decades as our circumstances change. I think we have been really not helped by the idea that faith is just hanging on to this one statement, no matter what. We have to grow. We have to question. We have to doubt. We have to look at things from other perspectives. We have to have conversations with people we haven't had conversations about, learn to see things from their perspectives. And then we bring it all back to our faith and we see where we are and we grow and we grow and we grow. And if we try to keep everything in this little box, not asking any questions, not doing anything but repeating the statement over and over again, then we stagnate and we fall apart.
It makes sense to me that if we put our faith in a box and it's stagnant, but yet we are moving on in our lives and having these experiences and growing and changing, and the faith isn't coming along for that, then that's going to be problematic.
Yeah. Right?
So that makes total sense. And I know that you're speaking from a place of having gone through some of this, Catherine.
I am.
Your own experience with deconstruction, as we mentioned earlier, it came a little bit earlier for you than midlife, a little bit.
It did, quite a bit earlier.
But I feel like it positions you uniquely to address the struggles with faith as you've already walked this road.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, if anyone understands the heartbeat of lost and found, it's you. And the story of your own faith journey through deconstruction in its own way and its catalyst, that is one that you're still unpacking in your heart. So today we've decided to focus on the found part of this lost and found equation. I joked with you earlier, but I decided I'm going to wrangle this book out of you one way or another that I want to, right? So that way we kind of turn the conversation that way. So based on your personal experience in this process, how think we walk alongside loved ones who are deconstructing, or maybe they're reconstructing or peeling back the layers of faith somewhere in this process? How can we meet them in this journey? And what basic steps can we take? Or what should we be mindful of as we're trying to embrace people that we love that are going through this process?
Oh, that's such an important question. Nikki, you know a little bit about my backstory and my street cred for talking about this. The listener almost certainly doesn't, because I haven't spoken about it publicly very much. I have a little bit, and I do plan to in this book that I'm writing right now. I don't want to derail this podcast by going into detail about my life history, my faith crisis, but suffice to say that most of the trauma that I have experienced in life occurred in my elementary school years, extending into my middle school in high school years, and that it was almost entirely inside the context of church. And that if I were to unpack it in detail, you would not be left thinking, I don't know if Catherine really understands what it's like to be hurt by a community of faith. Like I really do.
You get
it. I do. But what I do want to focus on for the listener today is that as much as I hate that part of my story, as much as I hate that this trauma and this abandonment and utter egregious malpractice, spiritual malpractice that I experienced at a young age, as much as I hate that it happened so early on in my personal and faith formation, the surprise gift of it is that who I am as a person and who I am as a person of faith has all been built on top of this upheaval. That these questions, these doubts, these deep feelings of anger and distrust are my bedrock. You know, what has gone on to be 30 years of life and of seeking for God and of wrestling and of questioning and of finding, of being lost, of being found. And not just once, you know, like we meander, don't we? I meander.
Yes, for sure.
So I think, again, the surprise gift is that there is nothing left that shocks me in faith communities, in faith, in conversations of faith, which is not to say that I am not deeply alarmed by some of the things we are seeing. I am. I feel angry when I hear stories that echo my own. I feel angry when I hear of people being mistreated. I feel angry when I hear about people using the name of Jesus to amass power or to police boundaries rather than to bring compassion to people who are in desperate need of compassion and to bring community to people who are in desperate need of community. When it's used, when faith and Jesus are used to withhold compassion, withhold community rather than extend compassion and extend community, I become very upset. So I'm not, when I say I'm not shocked, I don't mean I'm not very bothered. But if you wanted to come and tell me about some questions or some doubts that you were having, you could do so and not be at all concerned that you were going to hurt me in any way or that I was going to reject you. I've seen it. I have felt it. And That is in my foundation. That is in the cloth, the fabric of who I am. So how do we walk alongside? And I think that is the key, is we walk alongside. And we don't necessarily walk alongside perfectly, but we do it as a friend. We do it extending compassion. Mm-hmm. We do it extending community. I don't see Jesus really ever saying, I can't extend compassion to you. You're not really in my in-group. Or I can't extend community to you. You have not performed to my satisfaction. I see Jesus being extremely confrontational to the point that he is killed by those in power. But again, he's confronting those who are misusing their religious or political power to withhold compassion, to withhold community. So I don't see Jesus going to the leper or the sinful woman or the tax collector or anyone else who is suffering and saying, maybe if you could believe a little bit more like I believe, then you can come and have dinner with me. Again, my great heart for my life, for my time in this world, and for the church is to be known as those who have deeply wrestled. I think our leaders, our church leaders, need to not be people who see faith as a statement on a card that we hold on to as tightly as we can, but as a journey that sometimes is mostly filled with questions, and sometimes is mostly filled with pain, and sometimes is mostly filled with doubts. If our leaders have already gone through those valleys and already asked those questions and also already wrestled through dark nights of the soul that lasted for days and weeks and months and years, if those are the people we're looking to for guidance, then they're not going to be startled. They're not going to be hurt by learning that we're there. They are going to shepherd us. They're going to point us to Jesus with compassion and with a sense of belonging. I think about all of the What to Expect When You're Expecting books, or, a guide to adolescence. We need people who have been in the struggle that we are about to face to say, nothing has befallen you except that which is common to all people. You can get to the other side. I can tell you that because I have been there, and it's not going to be short and it's not going to be easy, but I'm going to stick with you and I'm going to walk with you. We need to look to people who can be honest about the fact that faith is a journey, not a statement, and that journey has a lot of dark walks in the valley, and is not afraid and is willing to say, I will walk with you. I'm not going to walk perfectly because I'm not a God myself, but I walk with you with compassion, with community.
So just being present in that with somebody without the judgment. And maybe let me circle back to What to Expect When You're Expecting. I read that book, five times or whatever. But I think expectations, Catherine, it seems like that plays a huge role here too. The expectation of the person going through maybe some faith struggles and the expectation of the person walking alongside them, but also the expectation that we've set up in the church.
Yes.
If the church leaders, and many of them have gone through their own faith struggles, right? Everybody does. But is the expectation that you show up and you're not admitting that? You've got your card, and it's almost sacrilege to admit that there's room for doubt. Catherine, you touched a little bit on examples of how Jesus interacted with people in their own faith journeys. So when I'm walking along with loved ones on their own journeys through faith, I am brought back to Jesus's encounters with those questioning previously held beliefs. So one person that comes to mind is Nicodemus in John 3. He's a Pharisee, and his encounters with Jesus clearly alter the course of his previously held beliefs. So he's kind of in the middle of being rocked by this teacher that is coming in and performing miracles, and he knows there's something different and true. I also think of how Jesus stunned his followers after they walked the Emmaus Road in Luke 24. And they were walking along. He joins them and they think that Jesus is dead. They don't recognize him, and they're shrouded in all this confusion and doubt. But he meets them in that, and he literally and metaphorically walks with them on that Emmaus Road. So as you look to scripture, including some of these examples of how Jesus interacted with folks on this journey, what do you think it teaches us as we are walking alongside people deconstructing?
Yeah. You know, in my book, All Shall Be Well, I said something, and I'm not going to be able to quote myself accurately, nor am I the only person who has ever said something like this. So I may accidentally quote somebody else and fail to quote myself. But something along the lines of, we think of the opposite of faith as being doubt. But in reality, the opposite of faith is certainty. Mm. I know that when I'm sitting in front of a computer right now in my bedroom, I am confident of that. I have that with certainty. I don't need faith for that. But there are things that I question. There are things that I wrestle with. And that's, I think, where we have an invitation to faith, which is not to say that faith is just this loosey-goosey kind of vapor in the mist sort of thing that only mystics can even begin to think about. The truth is that we all have a lot of questions and we all have a lot that we wrestle with. What does life even mean? How can we handle the fact that we will all die? What is the point of being here? How can we help each other along the way? Like, these are not things that we can have certainty about. These are things that we have to wrestle day after day. And I think that is the invitation, the doorway to faith, to meaning, to meaningfulness, to a relationship with God, to a relationship with each other. And I do agree with you that it's in the people who are questioning in the New Testament, or the people who are hurting, or the people who are desperately in need, that Jesus has these profound encounters. It's these things that are the opposite of certainty that allow for the most profound encounters with God to play out in their real life. And Nicodemus is definitely one of my favorite characters. I love how clearly well-schooled, well-versed he is. He's definitely one of the power holders in the story. But yet he does say, who is this man? And what would it take for me to learn from you rather than just demand that you submit to me? One thing that strikes me about the story with Nicodemus and that conversation, and this is something that I discussed in my seminary degree, is the idea that John, as an author, may be contrasting Jesus' conversation with Nicodemus with Jesus' conversation with the woman at the well, both of which are two of his longest conversations in the Bible, both of which are quite theological, both of which end very differently, one with an entire village converted, one with a man just continuing to ask questions. But the primary difference is that Nicodemus was as close to the center of the system, the religious system, as anyone could be. And the Samaritan woman was as far away. She was considered an enemy, a heretic, a stranger. Most people in Jesus' community would not have even walked through her country, much less stopped and had a conversation. She was a woman. And yet that conversation ended with incredible, generative spiritual growth. And maybe Nicodemus's did too, but we don't know that. And that, I think, is so telling, again, that it's not in the certainty. It's not in the person who is clearly the good guy. It's in the person towards the margins, the person full of questions, full of doubts, who doesn't belong, considered a heretic, considered an enemy. I write about that in my book, Fearing Bravely, as well. That's the person who really connects to Jesus. But we would really struggle to say, yeah, that happened. That's fine. That's okay.
Yeah.
So again, I think we are seeing the same sort of invitation here. Then you mentioned the Emmaus Road. I love that too, because they thought they knew what had happened. They were confident that they saw what went down. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they see something different. And they have that kind of moment where everything shifted for them. And some, like if there was a whole group there, maybe some of them would have written a different book where they said, it was at that moment that I realized I couldn't trust anything. It was at that moment that I walked away. But they were able to take this liminal space of understanding, of being able to trust their version of reality. And it became a generative pathway, not to loss, but to faith, a new season of understanding God. And that goes back to what I was saying before, that I think we reach these moments where we can't believe what we believed before, and we can't even see things the way we saw things before, and we can't trust the people that we could trust before. And if we don't have shepherds and mentors saying, yes, this is the next step in your life of faith, it's going to be hard for you to let go of that. It's going to be hard for you to process the pain that's involved here. But what comes after that is beautiful and life-giving. That's what I want for us. Oh, that's what I want for us.
Instead of saying, well, if you continue on this path, you're just going to go off the cliff.
Right.
Instead saying, let's lean into this.
Yep.
I believe that you're on to living more into the truth as you ask these questions, and that God will be faithful in helping you.
at least that it's possible, you know, that that's actually a vision we could aim for. Like, I'm not saying that if I wake up one morning and I'm like, you know what, I need to follow my heart. I need to leave my husband and kids. I think that the best life for me is living in Arizona, always going to the spa.
Right.
I don't want you to come alongside me and be like, Catherine, yes, live your best life. I need you to come alongside me and say, Catherine, there are vows and you said them and your selfish pursuits are going to harm other real people. I'm not saying no matter where your heart takes you, just go with it. But maybe you would need to come to me and say, Catherine, what is your needs that aren't being met in your life right now? How can you stay faithful to your husband and family, but also be a bit more honest about what your heart is telling you? And how can we create a community together? And how can we create compassion for you so that you can not destroy your children's life, but also pursue this new reality that you are seeing and realizing? And again, that's why we need community and why we need faithful and true shepherds who can say, not just whatever you're wanting is fine, but there can be life after this. Let's wrestle towards it together.
I think that's a really important point that you bring up, Catherine, because often paired with these pathways through deconstruction, there is this letting go of some of these things. You use the example, I'm just going to leave my family and go somewhere else. They can be in tandem, and to have someone that's walking alongside of you that says, there's something deeper going on here, and to encourage you to not just necessarily follow your heart, but
listen to what your heart is saying.
Right.
Yeah.
So that to be able to receive that as the person walking next to you, to stay there, to not be afraid of processing that, but also to continue to point them back to Jesus in those moments.
And I guess I want to clarify too, that if you had an abusive spouse, you know, maybe you do need to leave. I'm not saying that not to. I was using that as a metaphor to say the options are not don't listen to your heart or follow your heart fully without any consultation. We should listen to what our experience and our doubts and our questions are telling us. And then, God, please send wise mentors, send wise shepherds who have been in the dark valley and can help us find the light at the end.
That is a perfect segue into this next question, Catherine, and that is beyond what we can do individually with loved ones that might be going through this process, what do you see the role of the church body in this time where so many people are unraveling their faith or previously held belief as being? And you just touched on this a little bit.
Well, I wish that all the listeners could have like a little microphone that they turn on now and we have kind of like a group sharing time, because that's a hard question. You know, I can only see the little slices of existence and reality on the planet that I can see. I do think that we tend to see church right now, at least some of us in certain circles, see church as the place where we're holding on to that card with the doctrinal statement on it, and we're going to just make sure no one tears it out of our hands. It does create a very antagonistic environment. I write about this a lot in Fearing Bravely. But what Jesus has asked his followers to do is to be known by their love, and to be known for love, not just to their neighbors, but also to strangers, even when it's dangerous, and even extending that to enemies. And what that's going to actually look like for any given community, which, by the way, I do say community on purpose because I don't think it's something we are called to do as individuals primarily. But what that's going to look like for any individual community is going to vary wildly depending on their situation. I think that's the crux of it. Are we a community of people who are really wrestling with what Jesus said? And what Jesus mostly said was not, here's this doctrinal statement for you to hold on to until the very end of your life, and then I'll give you a quick test to see if you got it right. What Jesus mostly said is love and love and love and accept compassion and love some more. And if you see a heretic, you should love them. And if you see an enemy, you should love them. And if it's going to cost you something, you should love them. And that's how we're going to change the world. I'd be looking for a community that really smells like that.
And they're out there.
They are. They are not necessarily associated with any label. I have seen very conservative communities that are like this and very liberal communities that are like this and everything in between.
That gives us hope.
Yes.
And I love how you're leaning back into that word community, because so much of what I was asking at the beginning was about how do we do this individually? How do I walk alongside my friend or my family member? This is a group effort. It was meant to be.
Yes.
So Catherine, as listeners have heard what you've had to say, they might want to connect with you more or look into some of these books that you've mentioned that you've written.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the best way to stay connected with you and with your words as you continue writing and speaking? And I know you're in the middle of this writing project now.
Well, if you can spell my name correctly, which is challenging because both my first and last name have multiple spellings, but you can find me almost everywhere at Catherine McNeil. My website is catherinemcneil.com. My Twitter and Facebook and Threads and Instagram and LinkedIn is all at Catherine McNeil. If you go to my website, you'll get a pop-up that is inviting you to sign up for my newsletter. And I do not send it out very often, probably just a couple times a year, but you would get some words from me there that I would hope would be helpful. And I would keep you up to date on all of the projects that I'm working on.
And we'll put that in the show notes because I too have been guilty of switching around the I and the E too many times in your last name.
Can I just put in a little PS here that I am just one person and I'm not omnipresent and I'm not in your community, whoever you are, listener out there. But if this is the first time that you are hearing the idea that doubts and wrestling and questions might be a doorway to faith and to health and to a spiritual life and even to God rather than a kind of a shoots and ladders thing, you know, not the slide all the way to the beginning, but maybe a ladder that takes you to the next phase. If this is the first time you're ever hearing that and you are like, there's no one I can talk to about this, there is a form on my website where you can contact me. And again, I can't probably come to your house and listen over tea, and I probably can't recommend a church in your area, but I would be honored to hear a little bit of your story. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
And I know Catherine well enough to know that she really means that. So please do that. And thank you again, Catherine. Our prayers are with you as you continue on in this good work.
Thank you. And also with you.
Like Catherine, I've always had a thing for Nicodemus. I think I'm finally starting to understand why. Here, too, is where we find our Sting, Nicodemus, and Catherine intersect. The answer to the question posed at the beginning of this podcast. John 3 tells us that Nicodemus came to Jesus at night, literally. But we can gather from the rest of their conversation that it was metaphorical, too. Jesus' teaching, signs, and miracles rocked his pre-existing beliefs. We know that you are a teacher who has come from God, Nicodemus tells Jesus. And then a litany of statements followed by more questions. Statements that Nicodemus struggles to fathom and only leads to more questions. And finally, Jesus' bold declaration, "So the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes may have eternal life in him. For God so loved the world," John explains, "that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life." Catherine's right. We don't really know the rest of the story. The threads of this conversation were not gathered that night into a nice, neat bow. But we do know this. Nicodemus appears a few more times in John's gospel. In John 7, he advocates for Jesus' fair treatment by the Pharisees who attempt to arrest him, and later joins another in burying Jesus' body after he was, as he had told Nicodemus on that night earlier, lifted up on the cross. Faith unfolding in the midst of uncertainty. Faith emerging from the loose ends that cannot possibly be tied into neat bows. Which brings us back to Sting. I hear him belt out my favorite line in all this time. "Father, if Jesus exists," he asks, "then how come he never lives here?" And I hear my heart answer, "He is. He has been. All this time." To connect with Catherine McNeil, you can visit catherinemcneil.com. And yeah, it's Catherine with a C and an I before E in McNeil. You'll be glad you did. In spite of what they have seen. Thanks for joining us today. The Mudroom Podcast is a production of the Mudroom blog. It's executive produced by Tammy Perlmutter. It's produced, written, and edited by Nicole Wu. A very special thanks to recording artist Krista Wells for our theme song, "More Than I Am." Graphic design by Amanda Tingle Taylor. For more on the Mudroom, a place for stories emerging in the midst of the mess, visit mudroomblog.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. We'll see you here next time at the Mudroom, where the door, it's always open. How we need each other, we are. Sisters and brothers are islands, are great to visit, but I have found we aren't meant to live apart. I thank the one who sent you, 'cause he knows how much you've meant to me. How we need each other, we are.
Sisters and brothers, our islands are great to visit, but I have found we aren't meant to live apart. You make me more than I am.